Philadelphia, your San Jose, or DC, Los Angeles, Galaxy.
Beach Pass.
Colorado Rapids. Vancouver Whitecaps. Seattle Sounders. Montreal Impact. Chivas USA. York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
Well, that was a fun first week of MLS playoffs, wasn't it? We had a lot going on the first week into the first weekend, and we're going to break it all down with NBC Sports Network's Sebastian Salazar a little bit later. But the team that had the most fun over the weekend was New England Revolution. And the player who had the most joy, probably the guy who bagged two goals over the weekend in Columbus, that would be Charlie Davies, who I'm going to call a friend of the show as well. We had Dax McCarty on. He's been on multiple times. So is Charlie. We've bring him in right now to kick off the show. Charlie, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, Charlie, what's going on in the background, man?
I'm in the locker room.
Who's bumping all that music?
Probably Jermaine.
You know, I have some questions about Jermaine, and you know what? Let's start with the Jermaine, since he's the one kind of in the way of our conversation with his loud music. What's he listening to, first off?
He listens to Timberland and Jay-Z, and he'll throw in his occasional house, his German house. So it's definitely a mix of his music.
He loves being in the States, doesn't he?
Yes, he loves it.
How is he fitting in with the rest of the team? I know you guys were kind of on a trajectory, and we talked over the summer before Jermaine got there, and you guys were on a trajectory where you were going to reach the heights that maybe you were reaching now, and Jermaine put you over the top. But how is he fit in with you guys?
He's really, added that balance that we needed in our team. He's been a great guy to have on the field as well as off. He's brought that leadership to not only the younger guys, but the guys who are playing. He's got that experience that is very valuable for a team that's going to make a championship run. And he's been obviously instrumental for us on the pitch. Whether he's making these crunching tackles or scoring goals for us. So he's been a big piece to us having so much success.
Sometimes you see when a player who has spent a large amount of time over in Europe come to the States, whether he's American or non-American, maybe underestimate the style of play, maybe, I don't want to say mail it in, but just not really be up to speed on the pace of MLS as far as his physicality. You weren't worried about Jermaine Jones as a physical player, but maybe just him underestimating the quality of the league. That hasn't happened, and what do you attribute that to, his positive mindset coming in?
Obviously his mentality, whether you're playing Champions League, with, Besiktas or Schalke, or playing with the national team, in the World Cup, I think regardless of where he's playing, he's going to bring the same, hunger and the same bite to everything. So, it started with him in training. Just the first day of training, you could tell, there's a certain energy that he brought to the field, and, guys were feeding off it. Guys wanted to impress. Guys were, trying to show that they can play at the level he needs you to play at for the team to be successful and to have, practices that you're, still progressing. You're still trying to get better every day. And, he's obviously has all the intangibles, with his, he's fast, he's quick, he's strong, he's athletic. And some guys that come from Europe don't necessarily have, the athleticism to be successful in this league because it's a very athletic league. And he, not only does he have the athleticism, but he has the experience. He has, the skill, and the right mindset to help a team win. And then you combine that with the players that we already had, it makes us that much more dangerous, of a team, and really has obviously helped us be the game changer. Our record kind of speaks for itself since he's played with us.
We are recording this on a Wednesday, and as we record, it was just announced by the league that Jermaine was fined for simulation. You know, you just talked about all the things that he can teach the rest of the Revs because of his experience. Have you had a quiet word with him, Charlie, and given him the ins and outs on the way to simulate without getting caught?
I just said it's a league that has zero tolerance for it. Of course, my time with DC, I've experienced that firsthand. I really didn't even think that that would have been an issue, especially with the way Francis was trying to swing for the fences with his elbow.
Totally.
Those things happen. We're not going to let it affect us or affect our mindset. I think, it's important that we just play the game like we have been. So, of course, it's not the best of situations, and you never want to have that happen to your teammate when they don't deserve it. But we just play on.
All right, I have to ask you this before we move on from Jermaine. The guy spent most of his career playing in Europe, specifically cold weather climates. And yet, the first cold day, which was the Columbus match on Saturday, that guy's bundled up more than anybody else on the pitch. He's wearing leggings. Please tell me you said something to him.
At the time, I just let it fly. I was thinking, okay, maybe his muscles need to be warmed up, so maybe that's what he's thinking. I don't want to strain anything or pull anything, but I want to keep my muscles warm. So I said, okay, I'll let him, get out of jail free card for this one. But I'm not expecting to see those long tights anymore.
And at what point did you look over and go, wait a second, he's not taking those off. He's wearing them in the match.
Just after warm-ups, I realized, okay, this guy's serious. So, I would expect with a knee tattoo like his, I would think he'd want to show it.
Yes! Nope, just bundle it all up. And so you didn't say to him at any point, hey, dude, you forgot to take your leggings off. You forgot to do that.
Yeah, hopefully this Sunday he's not using them again.
All right, so you kind of had yourself a nice little match with two goals, totally different style of goals. Which one did you get a little more satisfaction from, the little curler from the top of the box or the header off of the set piece?
I, to be honest with you, I think it's one from outside the box. Just because, it's the first goal that I've scored from outside the box since my accident. So it just meant more to me just because I have that satisfaction of really, seeing progress that I'm making. And of course I'm trying to get better every game and build on every performance and try and get better every week. But that goal really, gave me the confidence and satisfaction of seeing the progress firsthand and knowing that I'm taking huge steps forward to get back to being at my best.
I'm really glad you said that because that was my favorite of your two goals because it was unlike a Charlie Davies goal. Usually when you think of Charlie Davies, he's getting on the end of things. He's being tricky and elusive in the box. And just to see that little bit of skill, which was unexpected from outside the box and curling one in, I was like, oh boy, if he's going to start knocking these ones in, look out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just being able to add that different dynamic to your game and being dangerous from not only in the box or getting in behind, but also coming back to get the ball and running at defenders. I think that's the last part of my game that I'm missing. And to finally have that part start coming for me, I think it's definitely a huge plus and it's, yeah, it's just something that I just need to continue to build on to get me to be playing at my best.
I love your hold-up play in the last season and a half since I've seen you with the Revs. To me, that's a new element to your game, and I assume you've added some new wrinkles and new elements to your game since you've been back from the accident. You've said in a few different places that this is the first time that you felt 100% since the accident. What was the last thing to come back for you?
It's always been, a bunch of things that I'm trying to improve on. I think now it's like everything clicked. I think, obviously a lot of things, I had to relearn again, and that second nature that I normally had in games that would come to me naturally wasn't really there. So my time in D.C., I think that was probably the most difficult time because I was still learning as I was going. You know, as I was playing, I'm still learning. Oh, I used to make this run, or, oh, that felt like I've done that before. Like, why haven't I done that, you know? And now it's like I'm not thinking about things. Things are just happening for me. So I think that was the final part, but it was literally working on every facet of my game that I really had to improve on and trying to put that all into one piece. So the hold of play is something I definitely didn't have at DC, and I wasn't consistent. So bringing consistency into the play, being strong on the ball, and I think really the part that I'm most proud of is being able to affect the game when I'm not either A, scoring, or B, creating a goal. How can I still help the team win? How can I still help the team be successful? And the hold up play is one big thing, but also opening up space for other guys. How do I do that with good runs? So being able to open up space for other guys or hold up the ball when the teams need it, or to be able to defend better, being the first line of defense, so being able to force the ball to a side and keep it on that side. So just putting all those into one, I think now I finally feel like, okay, I don't have to think about it. It just comes to me, and that was the biggest part of my game that I was missing. So, you know, it's always working on something to try and get better, but now I feel like it's just coming to me instead of forcing it.
You know, and the other thing that is kind of lost in this whole thing in your comeback to 100%, you were doing this, and, you know, the Revs had to do what they had to do with, as far as business was concerned, but they brought in person and after person after person to compete for that position as the number nine. And not only have you been trying to get back to your knowing things of second nature, you've also had to been competing with some really quality competition in the team to get that place and to really lock it down. To me, I feel like you've always been a strong person mentally. It's to the comeback from what you've come back to from, you have to be strong. But I feel like that maturity that you have now to fight for that place and to make it your own and do what you had to do to improve to keep that place was another thing that was missing in DC that you have now, which has taken you back to even greater heights.
Yeah, I would probably compare my time to DC as a childhood in like the grand scheme of things. Like, you know, it's just getting back on my feet, literally my first season after my accident.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things that I was missing, and I wasn't prepared for, you know, coming back and really having to relearn everything and having to go through the grind. I wasn't really prepared for that mentally. And, you know, it was real frustrating, and it took a big toll on me. And now it's like, okay, I've been through everything. I know how to handle myself. You know, you can't go into the coach's office because you're not playing or because you're upset and throw a temper tantrum or, you know, make something big of it. Cause you know, every guy at the end of the day who's not playing can go in and do the same thing.
Yeah.
That's not going to change anything. It's how you continue to fight on the practice field is what's going to get you back on the field. So, I realized, you know what, put your head down, just keep your mouth shut and just work. And, you know, obviously I had to battle through a lot of injuries, throughout this season. The whole preseason I missed because of a calf pull. I came back a couple games and redid it. And, you know, come the summer, I said, you know what, let me start from fresh and just wait for my chance. And sure enough, we lost it 9 games in a row, and he had to change something. So, you know, he put me in, and I made sure I was going to run with that chance and not give it up. And, fortunately, I've been able to just continue to build on each performance, and the guys around me have really given me the confidence to keep going, and they've helped me get to where I am now. I mean, they've really pushed me. They've seen what I was able to do in training, and they've kind of helped me translate it into the game. So all the credit to the guys in the locker room, because they've really rallied around me and have helped me get to where I am today.
All right, let's put you on the spot here with a little quiz. And this is a legitimate question. I am confused, much like a lot of people, about the away goals as a new feature for MLS playoffs. What do the Crew have to do to move on to the next round?
So MLS is trying to make it pretty similar to Champions League now.
Yes.
So, you know, teams are awarded for scoring away goals. So it's making the game a little bit more attractive and to watch, because teams now know away goals matter. So in this case, we scored 4 away goals.
Yes.
So that's quite a bit
it's a ton. That's
a team to play away.
So how many does Columbus have to score if you score 0 to move on? 100?
So they have to score 3 goals, and we have to score 0. So they have to win 3-0 to move on.
Okay.
Or they have to score 4 or more goals and score one goal. Or if they scored 5 goals and we scored 3, they would go through because they had more away goals.
Okay.
Away goals only count in a tiebreaker. If goals are even on both sides.
Okay, so they have to win by more than 3 goals than you they have to win by more than 4 goals by you if you guys score.
But yes. So they have to score 4 goals if we score 1 for them to advance.
Makes my head hurt, Charlie. Makes my head hurt. I just like adding. Who scored more over the
it's pretty simple. So it's just, you know, head-to-head tiebreaker. Is a way goal.
Yes.
So,
and you've
at the
got,
end of the day,
you've got 4 in the back pocket already.
Right. So at the end of the day, if we're both tied in goals, then at this point, if they won 4-2 here, we'd go into extra time.
And got it.
Because it's exact same. But other than that, when two teams play each other, they count the goals. So the goals are the same. Then they go, who scored more away goals? So away goals is the tiebreaker.
So what's been the message from Jay this week? Because, I mean, I'm sure it's not bunker in, but you also don't want to be get yourself stretched out unnecessarily, especially at the beginning of the match. So how has this week for preparation been as far as getting your mindset for what you guys have to do?
It's actually been the same, really. You know, it's the same old come out there, press them. If they want to go gung-ho and go for, you know, the 4 goals or, you know, whatever, it's going to leave a lot of space open. So we're going to be ready. We're not going to sit back. We're not going to let them play. And we're going to kind of do what we did to them in Columbus, which is just press them high and try and make the most of our opportunities. But, yeah, we're definitely not coming into this this home leg like all relaxed or thinking that the series is over, because as soon as you let them score maybe 1 goal in the first 15 minutes, then their outlook on the series changes, and once you give a team hope and belief, things can get dangerous.
Now, I know you're a number 9, but I know you have defensive responsibilities. But at the end of the day, you're a number 9. Are you kind of salivating at the prospect that they may throw the kitchen sink out at the beginning and get themselves a little bit caught at the back and maybe get a little of that top end speed counterattack going on? Does that kind of keep you up with a smile at night?
I mean, I'm not gonna lie. you know, absolutely. I'm hoping for that, because you know, obviously, I have my parents coming to the game. This will be the first time they'll see me playing in a Reds jersey, flying in from San Diego. And, you know, if I can continue to help this team win with more goals, then it's been great. So, you know, I'm hoping that they do that. So, you know, we'll be ready for that. And it's been a good playoff so far. We just have to continue to get better as a team, I think. You know, we still haven't played at our best yet, which is kind of scary. So if we can continue to be consistent and continue to improve, I think that, you know, everything's set up for us.
The exciting thing, if I'm a Revs fan, not just because of how great and how attractive you guys look on the pitch right now, but you guys put 30,000, I think, for the last match at Gillette Stadium. This playoffs, you're assuming the fans will come out at least at the same number. It's got to be fun for a fan to be in that big stadium and actually feel like it's filled up. I go through the same thing at RFK, so I know exactly that feeling of, wow, there are a lot of people here with me arm in arm. Do you guys get that when the huge crowd is out?
Oh, absolutely. Makes everything that much better, and that much more dramatic or that much more enjoyable when you have that many people there cheering and celebrating and pushing you forward. So in a stadium like Gillette, that's huge. When you're getting 30,000, 35,000, it makes a difference.
Yeah.
It makes a huge difference. So, yeah, we're excited. I mean, this is a big opportunity for us. So, you know, I think we have the right mindset and we have a great group of guys, which that get it. We had that, a lot of the guys had that last year of experience in the playoffs, with Kansas City. And, I think that's really helped the guys this year. So, everybody's on the same page. We know what we have to do to win games and to advance. So, yeah, we're looking forward to Sunday.
Well, Charlie, I have to say, first off, thank you very much for spending some time again. This is,
your
fourth appearance on the show. And also, I have to say, my son, who is six, watched your match with me. We watched the match together. He immediately went out that night and played for his team. He bagged himself a little hat trick, which made me very proud.
Hey,
and the last goal, he did your post-header celebration, which was very nice. So thank you for teaching him dance moves.
I like it. I like it. I like his style.
So you've got him hungry for goals, but you also got him hungry to dance as well. So thank you, Chuck.
And that's good. Tell him to express himself. It's the right way to do it.
Best of luck to you guys on Sunday, Charlie. I thank you for some time as always.
Hey, thanks a lot.
That's a true story. And, you know, there's nothing more humble than a six-year-old doing whatever Charlie did after he scored in Columbus on Saturday. Yep. It's great, though. And Charlie's right. It's all about expressing yourself. It's all about having fun. It's all about bagging goals if you're a number nine. And it's great to see him back in form and back having fun again. It'd been nice if he had done that for DC United, but we'll move on. That match is Sunday, 5 o'clock ESPN, Crew versus Revs. There is a whole host of weekend games. MLS playoffs continue this weekend with the Leg 2 matches. We need to bring somebody to break down the matches, set everything up, because in each matchup, there is a different scenario going on, which makes it very, very fascinating and something that we definitely want to talk about and break down a little more. And to do that, we bring in NBC Sports Network's Sebastian Salazar. Sebi, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. I'm doing very, very well. Excited for the postseason here. It's been a long, grueling 8-9 months to get to it, but this is the fun stuff, right?
Yes, of course. And we were just talking to Charlie Davies, so let's start there. I had him explain to me the away goal scenarios that Columbus needs to get through. He was surprisingly, Sebi, well-versed on it. I thought he would be like, hey, look, we're just going to try to win the game. But he actually broke it down for me and told me exactly what Columbus needed to do, which seems like a bit of an uphill climb, especially with the way this Revolution team is playing.
A bit of an uphill climb.
All right, yeah. A huge uphill climb.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be looking up that mountain. No, it's going to be really difficult, mainly because I think New England can still score.
Yes.
You know, and that's, I think it's at this point highly unlikely that certainly Columbus, but any team, would be able to get a shutout on the road against New England. They're creating a ton of chances. They're taking their chances. They're creating off set pieces. Which is, you know, another way now that they can beat you that they've added in. So New England scares me. They were kind of the famous, like, everybody picking, all right, this is a team you don't want to play come postseason time. And sometimes what everybody's saying is right, and it doesn't make sense to go against it. New England is the hot team. They are very scary right now. And I was surprised what they did in Columbus. I think most people were. But the Crew, to me, are one of the more well-organized defensive teams. So for them to get kind of gassed like that was really, really a surprise to me.
Yeah, and, you know, as good of a season, and not great, but as good of a season as the Crew had, I think you just touched on it. You know, I think their whole thing has been being organized and getting themselves
right
together at the back. And so then having to go on the road now and have to score multiple goals, it just seems like an uphill battle. And, you know, I brought up with Charlie, as a striker, he's probably salivating at the fact that if they throw the kitchen sink at the beginning, he's just going to kill him on the counterattack. And goes back to what you were just saying is, I don't see how New England doesn't score another goal at home.
Yeah, I remember talking to Charlie before a game in Kansas City. It was New England, Kansas City, maybe late September. Game that the Revs won 3-2, and they have a very kind of specific plan at times where they, you know, they look to hit you on the counter, and it's basically just Charlie turning up the speed, Bunbury when he's in there just kind of gets going. And when they do that, man, they're, you know, there's some things you just can't fight, and speed is one of them. They have it, and then they've got guys who just unlock that speed, playmakers, who when you're stretched because of the speed, now the guys like Wynn and Rowe get extra time on the ball. It's kind of like picking your poison with the Revs, and I don't know what the answer is yet, and I don't think many other teams in the Eastern Conference have found a suitable answer.
Yeah, and then the scary part about that whole thing, I'm talking about the Revs on the counterattack, and you saw it last week in one of the goals that they scored. Jermaine Jones is not afraid to leave whatever position they have him playing to just bombard forward and bring another option as they do take a turn on the goal on the counter.
Yep, and he can bang from distance, and I mean he's created a couple chances, had one that was, you know, kind of a weird deflection early on against Columbus that you saw. But, you know, in this game, that may not be the case. I mean, with the advantage they have, I wouldn't be surprised to see a more kind of reserved, conservative Jones. And look, Columbus, for whatever the final score may have told us, had chances. There were chances in that first half where the Crew could have been up 1-0. And then you never know what happens that game. Columbus can create. Justin Miram is a guy who can do it on his own. Higuain, Francis is a really dynamic threat getting forward. I mean, they have guys who, you know, if they score that first goal, suddenly there's a tension to the game. I don't know that they can come all the way back, but at this stage, if you're Columbus, you just want to get to a point where there's tension and see how New England, an admittedly young team, now with a veteran presence leader in the midfield, but how a young team handles that, here they might be coming at us. And I think that's the best bet for Columbus in this game.
I asked Charlie a number of questions about Jermaine Jones. Might as well continue about talking about Jermaine Jones, but not to Jermaine Jones himself with you. The thing that made him, that gave people fits or caused the most gray hairs for the national team seem to be the things that are making him have that adjustment to MLS a little easier than most players that are coming back from Europe or coming from Europe, and then also makes him a more exciting player in MLS. This swashbuckling style, this I'm going to pop up anywhere, which kind of kills you in the international game, in MLS makes him such a threat that I don't think we've seen a player like this in MLS.
Well, in the international game, especially for the United States, especially in the group that they were in, that willingness to kind of go off script or to stretch his role I think the perception, at least for me, was it was a guy who wanted to do more than maybe what was needed, kind of the bare minimum. And I don't know that that's a good thing or a bad thing. You know, coaches want players to play a certain role, and I get that, but sometimes the player can offer more. Yet in Major League Soccer, we are not so much going to remember the time you got caught out in a counterattack ended in a goal against Portugal or Ghana. We're going to remember you getting forward. And I think that ability to get forward and just be a presence. In those meetings, going back to that New England-Kansas City game, we met with the guys before the broadcast, and it might have been Charlie, it might have been Lee Wynn, but they in referencing Jones, they were like, his effect is basically like maggots to meat. You know, all of the attention and the defensive attention kind of, you know, is drawn towards that black hole in the middle of the field where he's gathering the ball and starting their attacks. And that just opens everything up for guys who are already very, very dangerous. His impact with this New England team is a case study for how to get the right guy at the right time in the right position to fit in with a group that needed one thing. I mean, credit to the Revolution. I know it wasn't maybe the way that most people who follow this league would have liked to have seen Jermaine Jones end up in Major League Soccer, but credit to the Revolution and that staff for identifying the one guy in the one position that would really take them out, not just one level, maybe two or three.
Now, it may be this match, but when we're going through these matchups for leg two, just give me a heads up so I don't have to ask you every time if this is the one you're most looking forward to. As we jump over to the Western Conference, L.A. versus RSL. Obviously, RSL.
That's the one I'm most looking forward to.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. I figured it was one of the Western Conference because the storylines are a little more intriguing there. Why is that the one you're looking forward to the most?
Style of play and storylines, kind of the confluence of the two. You know me, I'm kind of a, you know, I'm a freak for RSL. I love what they do from an organizational standpoint. I love what they do on the field. I very much enjoy how they play. And I think in some ways I'm also interested to see what Jeff Kassar is as a head coach. If he can string together if they can advance here and string together another run, you start thinking, okay, Jeff Kassar kind of stands on his own as a head coach. If not, you start thinking, well, how long will the Jason Christ, Garth Lagerwey, that kind of partnership and the effects of that partnership, how long will that, can that hold when the partnership is no longer in RSL? And then, LA, just for the storylines, will Landon keep playing soccer? I mean, do you need a bigger storyline than that right now?
No, not at all.
I mean, that to me is that we all, in some way, no matter who you're rooting for, and I just don't want to see him not play anymore.
Yeah.
You want to kind of see how that dynamic is going to play out. And I think it's after the first leg, it was one of those where you walk away and you're like, God, that game was, how was that game 0-0? How was that a 0-0 game? It was so exciting to me. It was so kind of back and forth. And yet at the same time, it had a little bit of that first leg feel. Like there was, two teams not wanting to lose it just yet, to get to the second half, still alive and still with a realistic shot. And so I think it's kind of all or it is. No, it's not kind of. It's all or nothing. It's all the cliches. And you really have a lot on the line. You have a club with a great identity that could be fading. And you also have a club with a great identity that could be fading because its star player is about to ride off into the sunset, maybe after the next 90 minutes.
And, the next matchup we'll talk about is kind of the poster child for the argument against away goals. But this match, as I was watching, and again, I'm not fully comprehending the away goals thing. I understand how it works. I've watched a number of Champions League games. I just don't understand why it was needed for this league and for this playoff structure. But as I was watching the end of that match and seeing both teams kind of taking chances to nick a goal at the end, I thought to myself, well, if this is the result of away goals, I'm all for it, because you had an RSL team who was thinking themselves, we need to get a goal at home before we get out of here. And LA going, look, if we can get a goal here before we go back home, we're in the driver's seat. So both teams were doing that kind of back and forth thing, which I thought made for a really exciting last 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I think it encourages the away team to be a little bit bolder. And if you've made the playoffs, you're a good team, right? And there's not a lot of teams that got into the playoffs, kind of parking the bus and just kind of sitting back and watching. MLS in general seems, teams that score goals have success, make the playoffs, et cetera, outside of Portland. I think if you look at it, it does add that element. And to me, the away goals just adds urgency to the first leg. When you don't have away goals, the first leg is just the first half. And when you have away goals, you really kind of, you make teams think about what can be accomplished in the last 45 minutes of the first leg. And I think sometimes tension leads to boring games. Sometimes tension leads to incredible back and forth games. It really depends on the two teams involved. I don't know that I ever had an opinion coming in on away goals. I don't know that I'll leave it without it, but in theory, it gives you what you want for 180 minutes as opposed to 90. It somehow levels that, I think.
Is Jaime Pinedo the wild card? Because I feel like everybody else, you kind of know what your matchup seems similar. These teams know each other really well. If you get Jaime Pinedo from this past weekend, I find a hard way for RSL to move on. But if we get the Jaime Pinedo of the last half of the season, then RSL's got a shot.
Well, yeah. I mean, basically, are you asking me if LA gets a shutout, how can we imagine them not scoring for 90 plus?
Exactly.
Right? I mean that's, yeah. So I think certainly you have to put them in the driver's seat given another performance like that from Pinedo. I don't think you can expect another performance like that from him, though. I mean, he was sensational against RSL. The type of, kind of 6, 7, 8, I don't know what the final number was, but multiple save performance, some of them kind of jaw-dropping, where you're saying that's what keeps you in. I don't think it's going to be that type of game. I think Pinedo's going to have a quiet night. That's not to say he won't get scored on, but sometimes when a goalkeeper is kind of under that constant fire, it's easier to be right there. You'll see a guy get kind of less and less action, and then when they're asked to stand on their head, once a half, they've really got to answer the bell. So it'll be a different dynamic for him, I think, for LA in general. I don't know that RSL will sit back. I just kind of see LA bossing this game based on what we've seen from them throughout the second half of the season at home.
So I've got my cheese, and it's all ready to go because I'm about to whine. And this is where the away goals, I think, stink as far as MLS is concerned.
Let me guess where you're going.
You play all season, you lock down a number one seed, and as a thank you, you get to have two goals that you need to make up at home for a second leg of a match with the play-in team. I don't like it. I don't think it's really rewarding the team that had the longer term success.
Wait a second. MLS did not hand New York a two goal lead.
No.
That lead was conceded through 90-minute performance in the first leg. So to call it a disadvantage, yes, it's a disadvantage because the first leg played out the way it did. So I think it's that's in theory, the number one team should be able to go on the road and not lose by multiple goals.
If you're the
number one team, right?
I
think the onus is more on the club than to say, hey, the league, this is a bad spot you put us in.
I don't appreciate you taking my wine away from me. That you could lose a hand if you try that again. And I agree with you. I think, DC United fans kind of walked away going, wow, that was bad. It's doable, but it's an uphill battle. There are a lot to take away and a lot of things that you can hang your hat on if you're a DC United fan. Something tells me, though, in my gut that Lewin Dula goal the guy's had a solid season when he's been healthy, but I don't understand how Chris Korb is looking down the line, seeing that he is the one playing him onside, and then he's the one to put his hand up instead of getting back on that play. That whole play, I think, is going to be the huge disappointment of the DC United season.
Yeah, and look, it's a lapse that to be frank, I thought in that game was coming. I mean, if anybody else watching that game didn't kind of feel like New York was owning the flow of it and kind of tilting the field DC United's way, I mean, you kind of felt like, yeah, there was they continued to get caught in these spots where it was a big Bill Hamid save or, to be frank, kind of poor finishing that bailed them out. And I think late in that game, you kind of got the sense, I don't know, maybe that's just the pessimistic DC sports fan in me, but you kind of got the sense that there was trouble coming and it leaves hope, but it doesn't leave a lot of, I think, optimism coming back to RFK.
Agreed. The only thing, obviously, I said there are things to hang your hat on. One of them is, of course, United has played a lot better at home. United has had some shutouts at home. And if you get the right people playing the right amount of minutes, two goals is such the tease line, because if it was one, you'd feel confident even though you were down going in. If it was three, you could almost write the match off. This two is just that little push of dread, doubt. It's just everything that you don't want after the season that they had, which to me is the most disappointing part, is if it all ends now, it's a disappointing season when you think about it in terms of what was expected coming into this last part of the year.
No, I think that's fair, but it's really fair to classify anything that's happened here for DC United as disappointing.
I know.
On kind of a big picture note, but it is. If you finish first, you ought to be able to, as the league kind of assumes with the away goal thing, go on the road, survive, at least make it close coming home. But it's interesting, right? The next goal in the RSL game, not so much Dallas and Seattle. I just think Seattle's better there, but the next goal in the New York DC and RSL LA feels like that team wins, because I've seen DC United kind of get the snowball rolling against New York and RFK too many times and seen that play end, 3-1, 3-0, 4-0, where I think this New York team can get turned and kind of beaten soundly. But you have to start the unraveling somewhere. And I don't know if it's a New York team that knows it knows what it has left in front of it, which is basically don't concede. I don't know if that New York team's going to be as easy to unravel simply because they know what's at stake.
And here's a United person complimenting the Red Bulls in the only way that he can, which is doing a backhanded compliment. I don't feel like that defense, I don't go in going, well, that defense isn't going to concede. I feel like that defense you can score on. But the other side, so that was the non part of the compliment. The compliment part is if Pecky has figured out who he's going to play centrally, and I talked to Dax McCarty last week about, you know, how they're going to figure out who's going to play centrally, and he was like, it's a coach's decision, and it seemed as if he kind of figured it out a little bit through these last two matches. If that's figured out, and if Henri is going to play like he played in leg one, there's no shot. There's just no chance.
Yeah, no, I mean, because they create too many chances, and that's the thing that always worries you about New York. You know, even when you saw this. And look, I don't think anybody who's a DC United fan went into the playoffs, and despite the fact that they were the number one seed, was thinking, oh, this is a walk.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be a cakewalk through. You figured, look, I mean, it's MLS, it's a crapshoot, it's the Eastern Conference, which even by MLS standards is extremely random. But, yeah, New York has found a way when they get the ball to basically, no matter how well set up you are, attack you with such speed and such penetrating passes that it feels like you're always kind of defending on the counter. They switch the ball well so that if you're set up on one side of the field, they switch the point of attack so quickly, it becomes a counter down the other side. They're really good at making you defend kind of what feels like or what looks like on TV kind of off balance. And then they've got guys who are really good at getting in good positions. Right, Phillips, you know, it's funny. I can just so understand what a frustrating player he must be for Red Bulls fans, because you can't knock somebody that's gotten into position enough to score that many goals. But boy, I mean, I don't know that a game has gone by in the last 2 months where I didn't see him leave two clear chances kind of on the table. Chances that you would think most people might score, but also most people might not get into those shots. I think it's a real uphill battle for DC, but I think if they, you know, it's obviously cliche, but if they score that first goal, you know, RFK is going to be rocking on Saturday. And I think this, the one test on this New York team is, you know, what are they really made of? Kind of the intangibles. And that back line, it's got some experience. It's also got some heavy feet. And if you can get some of these guys bombing in from the wing and you can get a little more of a dynamic look from DC United holding the ball in the final third, a little more final third possession, they'll create some chances too. They'll definitely create chances.
Last thing on this, and you can make the answer as short as possible if you want. Seeing Spindola and Johnson kind of try to work their magic on their own, and it doesn't seem like they don't like each other. It just seems like
that was generous.
It doesn't seem like they enjoy playing with each other. They might like each other off the pitch, but it doesn't seem like they enjoy playing with each other on the pitch. Is this enough? And if let's take Silva out of the equation, if he's healthy, he's going to play. But is this enough for Ben to say, you know what, let's try Pontius up top with Rolf from the beginning, and then maybe we switch Rolf and Silva at some point and go from there? Is it enough there, or do you still trot out your designated player?
You're asking me what I think. I mean, I think what based what we saw in the first leg, and the truth is we don't know exactly what his status is for Chris Rolf, but I think Chris Rolf has to be on the field and the focal point of your attack as much as possible in this game. To me, he's the difference, and I think you've got to give him the opportunity. He's the type of nimble, quick, clever player who's going to find the space in that New York, in and around that New York back four. He can hit it from beyond the area, which forces them to kind of step up early in the game, especially if he can, you know, get a crack in the first 15 minutes or so. But he's also smart enough to pass and play off others. You know, I am not, when I look at the DC United front line and I take salaries off, to me, I'm sorry, Eddie Johnson is kind of the elite impactful of all their forwards. And I know that that's tough, and I wouldn't want to be Ben Olsen. I wouldn't want to have that decision to make or have that conversation to make. But, you know, that's the price you pay to invite a guy like that into your locker room, is that you hyped him, his arrival up so much, and it was kind of assumed that he was going to be the savior. And now everybody else has kind of stepped up. And that's not to say that Eddie hasn't had a big role this year, CCL or other places, and hasn't contributed kind of in some other ways. But if you're looking at straight up impact, what I want over 90 minutes And what I want in a game where things might get ugly, you might go down a third goal, you don't know what's going to happen. You're going to need some guts. And I want, in that situation, I want a guy like Chris Rolfe out there. I want other options. I haven't seen enough from Eddie Johnson to this point this year to reward him with that start with all this on the line.
So I like what you're thinking. And so I'll adjust what I said to go with you and say, if we could do a Rolfe Espíndola up top start, Rolfe go 45 at the half, you bring in Silva, hopefully he can go 45. Then you take off Pontius during crunch time, bring in Eddie Johnson with tired legs for the Red Bull defense. That's a best-case scenario. It probably won't happen, but it'll be interesting to see what happens. That's Saturday. As we go to the Western Conference for the other matchup, I think a lot of people underestimated FC Dallas. I know I was one of them. They went up 1-0 over Sounders. Sounders got the goal back, so we head back to CenturyLink in a 1-1 matchup. How do you see this breaking down for leg two?
Look, Seattle's just got too much quality. I think it's going to be a wide-open game. I think there's going to be a lot of goals. I wouldn't be surprised if Seattle scores first again. But I just think there are two teams in this league that have a ridiculous advantage over everybody else, and it's Seattle and L.A. because of their investment up front. You know, the most difficult thing to do in soccer is score goals, the thing that you must most heavily pay for financially to have success is you got to pay for forwards. Those two teams have done it. They've done it overwhelmingly. So I think Seattle, if they get five chances, is far more likely to get two goals. You may need 10 chances for another team in this league to get those same two goals because nobody else has that kind of that high-end striker ability that Seattle has. But I like what FC Dallas does, man. They're really good on set pieces. It's not just Michel. I mean, they got guys that know how to attack the ball. I think there's some, for me, the concern about Dallas is some of the movement of late in the back. You know, Zach Lloyd going from center back where I thought he had done fairly well to now outside back. You know, you're moving pieces around Matt Hedges, who's had a very, very good year. I just, what is Javon Watson at the end of the day? Once you get into this level of playoffs, like what kind of an impact player is he back there? So I like Dallas. I like him from the midfield on a lot. I think they can get a goal, maybe two in this game. I just think Seattle at home is too much. At some point, you just have to look at the rosters and say, this team is better. I have to go with that. Though Dallas has had an incredible year, and they are underrated, man. Castillo, Andres Escobar, I mean, those guys are really, really fun to watch. Blas Perez is the guy you hate to go against, but is extremely effective. And Mauro Diaz to me is a guy that, wow, you know, some of these guys are, they got, you know, I can say this to you because you're a DC guy, that Robert Griffin III effect. When they're healthy, they can be, you know, tantalizing. And Diaz to me is one of those guys. Whenever he's good, whenever he's fit, and whenever he's on the field, just so much fun to watch. He's literally a touch away from a goal.
See, I thought that that Dallas played reasonably well defensively, especially against the firepower that you just mentioned that the Sounders had. So I'm not saying I'm surprised, but here's a better question. How would you evaluate how Seattle played offensively in leg one? Would you say that was their normal kind of setup? Were they a little subpar and you're expecting them to be more how they usually are in leg two?
Yeah, I didn't think they were as dynamic as I think the usual Seattle that we're accustomed to seeing. But I also think the game didn't either demand or dictate that. The game itself, to me, was there were exciting moments. But it was, to me, maybe of the first leg games, the most timid in terms of kind of teams that I thought were very much feeling each other out. I mean, RSL LA ended goalless, but Dallas Seattle to me really felt most like kind of, all right, let's agree to meet up in a week and
got it.
This off. So I think that was more the game than maybe Seattle themselves playing a certain way. They kind of took what the game gave them, to borrow another cliche. And you know, they got the road goal. I think that's probably your only goal going down there. Even though you're the, you know, top seed and you ought to be this and you ought to be that, Dallas is a very good team. So, you know, you go down there, you get a result, you get the road goal. It may not have looked good, but it was really good because you know what you got coming back home if you're Seattle.
And that's a great observation because I felt that too. I was watching the match. You're right. It did feel like a first leg match. And it even felt like even when Dallas went up 1-0, it didn't look like the Sounders were going, oh boy. It still felt like, all right, if we get out of here 1-0, we're fine. It was just, let's get back to CenturyLink with a job to do and not a mountain to climb.
Well, it's interesting you say that, right? Because I don't disagree with that after the goal, except for in the response to the penalty kick. I thought I saw a little bit of kind of desperation from Seattle's defenders in their pleas with the referee. And so, you know, to me, it's like, all right. To me, there they saw like, uh-oh, here it goes. We're down again. This could be happening. The overall response from that point. But I remember watching the game, watching the PK, and thinking, "Wow, these guys are really frantic." And I get it, you know, you get upset by that. But it was to me very interesting that their initial response, and then kind of how they seem to get more even keel after that.
So you're kind of putting your eggs in the Seattle is just that good basket for leg two, rather than the other narrative, which you can go with, which is Dallas is just kind of too young or too naive to do a job like this on the road for a second leg.
No, I just, you know, I saw Dallas very recently. I saw them in Colorado, maybe next to last week next to last week of the regular season. And it was a Colorado team that was, you know, playing out the string. It was a road game. And while I have a lot of respect for Dallas's individual talent, that day I saw them go on the road and they didn't look like they won the game, but they didn't really look like a playoff team. And that's my last kind of face-to-face visual with Dallas. It stuck in my head that I'd really like them on tape. I'd really like them going into the build-up to that game. But they have not been great on the road. Even though they won that game against Colorado, they were not great. And so now, you know, for the first time, they're kind of heading back onto the road into this ramped-up atmosphere. And I just think it's unfair to expect them to, when they struggle on the road against lesser teams, now against the best team, get a result on the road. I'm really just going off what I saw last and kind of the what makes common sense having seen their recent results away from Frisco.
So before I let you go, I know you're not on the Houston beat any longer, but before you left, what were you hearing as far as coaching is concerned? I know they hired a technical director / GM this week. What are you hearing as far as coaching?
So it's interesting. The last I heard was they're really the technical director hire, which in Matt Jordan, I think it's tough to say if you ever get it right, but checks off as many boxes as you could hope. And certainly with what they were looking to do, the coaching hire to me, and it's something that, you know, I talked about, you know, last week when I was still in Houston, from what I'm hearing, they're not necessarily hell bent on it being somebody with overwhelming MLS credentials.
Interesting.
They wanted that for the TD spot because it's such an odd league unique league in the way it's run. So you really need somebody who understands all the different areas and then how they apply to this league. The coaching situation, I think they may go kind of outside the MLS box. And yet there's also kind of the underlying thought that ever since Dominic Kinnear left, all we've heard from Chris Kennedy, the Dynamo brass, the front office, is kind of this commitment to maintain or retain the core values of the quote-unquote Dynamo way. And the only way to do that, you would think, would be to kind of dip into the pool of people who have at some point or other come through the club. There's obviously the assistants that were working under Dom, Lloyd Barrett, Steve Ralston. I think Barrett would be the guy that most obviously fits that. Tim Hanley, you know, his goalkeeping / assistant coach, is another name. Wade Barrett would be the kind of the leader in the clubhouse of that group, but I don't think necessarily he's the guy that gets this gig. There's guys like Craig Weibel, who had a great year in RSL, really respected up there, has ties to the club. If you want to look a little bit deeper, maybe for a staff option like a Paul Dogleish, who had some time in RSL, also now in Austin. I mean, there are names out there with a Dynamo tie,
yeah.
But I don't know. I think some of that is kind of public saying, hey, we want to continue the success of the old Dynamo way. And yet, if you look at the verbiage coming out in all the stuff, kind of fielding for their new technical director, their culture change. They really want to do things differently. So it'll be interesting. I think the coaching hire will tell us how much they really want to maintain of the old Dynamo roots after kind of saying it publicly for the last month or so.
Now, I'm sure we're going to talk sometime in the next month. So the only reason I'm saying what I'm saying now is just so we got a little on the record type situation. Just looking at brackets and stuff, you know, if you're a neutral observer, that RSL LA matchup, I don't want to say should be the odds on favorite to go on, but let's say if that whoever wins that does go on, they've got it's a tough road. So if you win that match, you take on Seattle if everything projects out, and if you win that matchup, MLS Cup versus New England, if we're going on form, whoever wins at RSL Los Angeles, you will have earned the cup at that point if you come through that kind of bracket.
Absolutely. I think you could say that about anybody that comes out of the West. But to me, I think that the standard thought is the LA-Seattle winner is the best team in the league. And then, you know, hey, if you win MLS Cup on the day, that's kind of luck of the draw, however it might be. But I don't know that I put RSL – because if LA wins, I think they then do become – because I just give them the playoff edge experience over Seattle – I give them the kind of momentum of Landon Donovan so well. I think there's a lot of kind of extra stuff playing for LA where if they can get past RSL, I think they do get the MLS Cup and most likely 7 out of 10 days win that against the New England Revolution or New York or whoever it may be. RSL is tough because you're asking them now to beat LA with the disadvantage of being home first and then beat Seattle again. Now you're talking about getting over two hurdles in the space of a week for a team that, you know, it's high quality, but I just think in general you have to look at the situation where you're at a disadvantage now if you're RSL. You're at a disadvantage against LA, so you're going to have to overcome Seattle. I don't know that RSL gets out, that they become my favorite if they win this, but LA certainly does.
He's traveling the world, or at least the country. Safe travels to you, my friend. Sebastian Salazar, thank you as always, my friend. We appreciate the time.
Hey, great to be on with you. Thanks.
For more show information, go to pitchpass.com.